Hi, I'm Josh, and I'm actually a socialist vampire, and what I am seeking is an entire consenting vampire coven that we can all share our blood equally among each other.
Hey, I'm Matt, and baby, all those bodies in there, they mean nothing to me. I'm your monster.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm your automatic for the people, buddy.
You're all right.
This is Charlie down in Austin, and I was trying to think of something with like that thing where people make the little heart gestures with their hands, and like if they put their hands in their eyes and they couldn't see, but then it would be cute, and I got nothing. So, I've been really enjoying watching Josh Rubin and company cheer on their movie from online, on their online sort of capacity. It's been really, I find it very endearing and enjoyable. So Josh Rubin and all involved in Hard Eyes, we're in your corner. I'm in your corner. We're in your corner.
Oh,
like, it's so much fun to watch you guys see the returns and kind of rooting on this wonderful thing that you made. And because it's sincere and it's I made a thing. I like the thing I made. And I love that. So yeah,
we did it.
And much like Whitney Houston's favorite form of
coordination
is hand eye. This is Horror Show Hot Dog. First up, we have a short called Man on a Train, or Hombre en un Tren. The short starts most misleadingly, I feel, with a woman on a train.
It's like, hey, we only have two genders in our shorts.
I've never seen a more open and shut case of false advertising since the Neverending Story.
It's like, get that fucker stopped.
We only have two genders in our shorts.
It depends on how big your shorts are. Everybody into the pool.
So the thing with this one is 90% of this just willied me out 10 ways till Tuesday. It was just giggity. Because there's another one that's similar to this setup. I think it was French or Belgian, right? Years ago, where it's the lady keeps looking and then this thing keeps getting closer. Yeah. And it was it was on a bus maybe or something like that. Yeah. And it's but then, so with this, 90% of this, yeah, just and then it's then the ending part, I just sort of went it was
the problem that so many shorts have is what's the button gonna be?
Yeah,
and that's the hard part. I understand, but it's still frustrating.
It was weird, being into it, and then going, oh, but you forgot the last bit, sir.
Yeah.
And the thing, I kind of respect that it's the reflection in the mirror and that kind of bleh moment instead of going for a big old jump scare. But then also, I could use something else.
It still just does kind of end on a boogin, which, that's fine. Sometimes that's enough. But I'm kind of glad you guys at least sort of took it the way I did, because I wasn't sure if this would be one where we'd come to the record and you guys would be like, what the fuck, dude? Because it is.
No, I think it's really well put together.
But it's that's the thing, is it's it is on paper, it doesn't sound like much. And there are so many bad versions of this. But
yeah, it's the
they add in the sauce here, I was just instantly hair on my arm stood up, oh, this is bad. I hate watching this. I'm scared. This is freaky. And then it just kind of ends with a whimper, which is probably good because it let me sleep well. But it does somehow just tap in just right to the idea of this creepy thing that just is there whenever you look. So you don't want to look, but when you do, it's worse.
Well, in the movement, that was the thing. The second look, once the other people are gone from the train, the first time she looked, the second time she looks at it, and the thing kind of pops in sort of a way, where it's natural adjacent, and you're just god damn it, no. Mm-hmm. I thought it was maybe just a dude fucking around, but nope, that's not right.
Way back in my 20s, I was helping on a short film for a guy, and we had one character that was your basic guy that offers you a deal is too good because he's the devil type thing. And one of the things that we ended up doing to give it that little bit of weird is if you'd have a moment where, say, someone's talking to him and they're, you know, a little, you know, 10 feet from each other, when you would next see the both of them, he would have moved without you seeing him move, and it would be just far enough to him. He'd go, well, I guess he could have taken two steps, but it seems weird. You know what I mean? And it worked really well. Cause there's just something where you're like, but that doesn't sit right with me. Like, if, you know, cause you know how often in like public, you look around, you look down, you look back up, and everybody's about where you'd expect them to be. Yeah. And it doesn't take too far to make that weird. And I think that's maybe how this works, is it's like, it's not just some dude trying to be a creep. You can tell immediately that there's something worse going on. And however they achieved that, I couldn't quite put my finger on it, but it works. Like, that part sticks to your ribs. It's just, it doesn't quite stick the landing. Everything's sticking tonight, I guess. Sorry.
Everything's sticking. Come on down to Bob's house of honey and barbecue sauce. Everything's sticking tonight.
So anyway, what do we think? Should people see this?
I think you should give it a shot. It is like a pretty simple setup, but there is a new way to move weird in here that I liked. And just the moment when all of the banal noises that she's been hearing are just suddenly gone, and all the people she's been idly people watching are suddenly gone, that just kind of, there's a Wiggins there for sure.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's short enough, and it's creepy enough in its shortness that I think it's worth it.
Well, and also, I would say the last little thing that makes it work, I think, up until then part is, it's that thing where, like, the first to the second time, and then when people disappear the second time, where, like, there's part of you that goes, why don't you stand up, like, hey, what the fuck? What's going on? Like, whatever. But there's a social construct that, like, when you're in public places or whatever else, and somebody's doing something screwy, like, there's a part of you, or I would say most people, that goes, like, I shouldn't say anything because I'm just going to, like, embarrass myself, or, like, you know, I'm...
Or worse, they'll focus their attention on me. You know, there's enough crazy people at the bus stop that I go to that, like, I'd prefer if you just didn't notice I was here. So,
And it's sort of like, and so it's like the fact that she doesn't do the, hey, what the fuck? Or just like, I'm getting off this fucking train. Like, and just sort of like, I'm just going to settle, I'm going to kind of push myself into my chair slightly, because then, you know, this will go away. And it's just like, God darn it, you missed your shot. And it's like that choice feels very almost Stephen King-y, where it's sort of like, it's like, oh, you had a chance, but you missed it. And I'm like, nuts. And sort of like, so that all that stuff works really well. It's just that last bit where she just sees the thing, the reflection, and it's like, darn, I just
Not terrible, it's just it doesn't live up to the premise.
I mean, I would almost say, like, you know, I would take that even over, like, you know, like a big jump scare kind of situation. Although I kept thinking, what is it going to do? It's going to peek over the top of the damn chair like a fucking thing that head in the box. The face of the box
here. Look.
Yeah, it's like, God. Nah. So they're like, and so they didn't do that. It's like, okay, well, there's no big boogity either. And I sort of like, I see a vague reflection of a thing, and then it stopped. I'm like, well, all right.
Gotta move.
Yes, sir. So, like, I would say push. I mean, I don't think it's any harm in seeing it. And it wasn't one of those endings where you go, God damn it. It's more just like, oh, all right, kind of a thing. Like, wait, so, yeah, it's fine.
It stopped. Cool. So let's then talk, please, about Heart Eyes or Ojos de Corazón. Involved in Heart Eyes is a longtime friend and recipient of our affection, Christopher Landon, who directed Freaky and both the Happy Death Days, and we've got a ghost, and seems to in general just want us to be happy.
Yeah.
And in this one, instead of taking a horror, like a movie, and making it a horror movie, like Back to the Future and Happy Death Day, they're taking a horror movie and putting a romantic comedy on it. And that horror movie is Scream, which is kind of great. And then it's the rom-com that is also self-aware, but is doing the Princess Bride thing of being a good example of the thing that's parodying. So, like, all of this is delightful and fun.
Yeah, that was the biggest, like, because I, as the longtime listeners and you two fellows know, you know, as much as I have varied interest in things that I think have a high quality, I also like romantic comedies and Hallmark movies a lot. Mm-hmm. And so, like, there are people that have tried or waded into those waters at times, and by and large, it hasn't been hugely successful, really. You know, like Happy Death Day is a great example, one that works beautifully. Spontaneous is another one that works beautifully. But it's an easy thing to try, it seems like, but a hard thing to get correct, because at some point you're going to end up sneering at one or the other. And like, you just don't give the regard that it needs to make it work. And in this one, I really genuinely think that they were like, we love some of these romantic comedy things. We love them very much. We really love slasher things. We love them very much. And then they went like, so we really have to treat both of them equally. And they somehow pulled that off. I think that's one of the reasons why this works so damn well.
It's astonishing.
Regard for both things. And on top of that, they seem to also understand that, like, if you really love either one of these things a lot, you're also, and if you're a wise ass in any capacity, you're going to recognize a lot of the silliness in either one of those things, but still love it that they're like silly. And so they actually apply some of that too, without it seeming like they're, you know, punching down, laughing down, all that kind of stuff. Like, somehow they balance all that shit.
this movie would not work without the sincerity.
Like, yeah.
That is, and we're all, I think, on record as being fans of sincere things. But,
engineers. I'm still buzzing about Sincere Engineer. So good. Good show.
Well, and we did, weirdly enough, we went to a Sincere Engineer concert, and I, in a moment between sets, I was like, so anyway, Hard Eyes was dope, and we talked about Hard Eyes. and that was like part of that conversation was like the thing that once I twigged to the idea that, oh, this movie is going to, instead of setting up almost like just missed him chances to get killed or just missed him getting saved, it's going to go just missed a chance to do a romantic comedy trope. So that, like, by the time she realizes she's locked out of her building and he has just, you know, used the Chekhov's hotel room key by mentioning that he's going to stay somewhere else at night, I'm like, here's where you do the, well, this is weird and I'm not trying to be weird or gross, but, you know, I do have a hotel room, why don't you come back? And that would be the start of something. And then of course they subvert that. Once I realized that's what's happening, then I was just eagerly looking forward to the next broad and obvious rom-com moment, because I knew they would do something that would surprise me immediately following. And I was not let down. They do that a bunch of times in this movie, and it just never got old. I was having so much fun with that.
Well, and they made the brilliant choice of our two leads in this, which is
they're so good.
Olivia Holt and Mason Gooding, where, like, Olivia Holt, who I described as baby Jennifer Lopez, because she looked like Jennifer Lopez. It's like, it was just through, like, really initially, I was like, wow, that's weird. It's like, yeah, it's like, you know, 5 years before Out of Sight or something like that. It just looks just like her. But what I loved is that they gave, and they've been doing this in movies recently, it's really cool, where they give female characters, like, agency. But, like, so she's got more to her. She doesn't just, like, oh, I hate Valentine's Day, but, like, I secretly long for it. It's more like, I have legitimate reasons for having these walls up, but I'm also a person that has more than one side. And so it doesn't mean that I'm closed off the idea of, like, human connection and the value of people. I'm not, like, some hermit, but, like, these things that I've put up are legitimate. I'm not necessarily right about everything that I've put up or that I'm fussing about, but, like, so it just makes her more dynamic. She's not just sort of like, and the switch, and you go like, oh, and then everything's, you know, sunshine and puppies. And I love that they gave her some things to be wrong about or things to be overwrought about, because that's okay. Like, that's okay.
Yeah. Like, well, you know, it makes her relatable.
Like,
you know,
they both makes her more interesting. And then I liked him that way, that same way too, where, like, there's almost a too cool for school thing, but then it's like, nope, he's an awkward doofus, and he has his own reasons for being kind of, like, well, having
and
difficulty.
That's another part of what I think works so well with the chemistry with those two is that this isn't so polished like watching, Paul Rudd and whoever, like, just, you know, trading verbal, you know, barbs back and forth, or kind of, you know, doing the everyone's got the perfect response to each little romantic interaction. Like, they are clumsy.
Yes.
And it's and it's not clumsy in the performance, it's clumsy in the character. Go ahead.
But at the same time, I was impressed that they didn't push them into the, like, adorkable thing.
Yeah, they're not going Sandra Bullock.
Yeah, I always think of almost every female Disney lead in the last 10 years, like Anna from Frozen, Moana, like they're all clumsy, and then they have their like, wait, what? Oh, but I guess I gotta go here, and like, fine, but that gets old after a while.
Well, and it and gives your character less agency.
Yeah, like she is a little bit clumsy, but she's not that like adorkable, OTH, I've seemed to have fallen over kind of thing.
Yeah, and I guess
the dialogue doesn't sound like they improvised 20 versions of it and picked the one they liked the most.
Yes, that was the other thing I noticed too.
It was written and crafted to be delivered, and I really appreciate that.
Yeah, and it's, I guess I should be, to be clear, like there is a scene that is in the coffee shop that is definitely built on traditional rom-com clumsiness, but the more of the clumsiness, I guess, that I'm thinking of is emotional clumsiness, you know, again, with like her notions of how the world should work and her place in it and all the things that you'd expect him to be too smooth about. He's also bad at, and not necessarily through his own fault. It's just circumstantially or whatever. But again, all that is very endearing and relatable. It's surprising how well that works. I guess I've said that five times now, but it's true.
Well, and then, like, then there's other moments where the dinner, where she kind of hits him with both barrels and like says one too many things, and it goes from I'm stating my point of view or my whatever else, and I've overstepped into something kind of more personal, and it was like, and he just, and understandably, he kind of goes like, ow, that ouch, and then she kind of realizes like, I'm not gonna change my entire worldview, but that, Jesus Christ, that's not what I meant.
And it was, but like, there's another moment where they both learn something about each other and maybe themselves, but it doesn't turn out perfectly. They don't immediately like make amends, and they're all lovey-dovey forever.
Yeah, it's not perfectly crafted. So it's so there's a clunk to her overstepping, and then being like, oh man, and then when he started talking about the thing about like putting everybody up on a pedestal, whatever else, like when he's kind of describing that, it's sort of like, on the one side you could say like, well, I mean, that's not necessarily good, but then another argument can be made, it's not necessarily bad to be like, to try to think the best of people either, and so there's like some nuance to that part of it too, and it's like, but yeah, and again, like, if they didn't care about the romantic comedy beats, you wouldn't have spent that much time crafting each one of these people to kind of be that way, which is like, so you have this great setup in that regard, but then you have this fucking brilliant setup of like, you have this guy who's a serial killer who killer travels and like kills people who are like in a relationship or whatever else, and then because there's a level of confusion about whether or not they're in a relationship or not, then he's like, oh, there must be a couple, so we have to kill them, and it's like, that's fucking amazing.
Like, which is like funny because of the sort of mistaken identity and like, how do we prove that we're not really a couple and not just saying that because you don't want to kill us? But it also has that rom-com thing of a secondary character seeing that these two people are meant for each other, even if they can't see it for themselves. So yeah, it's working on a couple different levels that is just like, again, I just was like, fuck, I look forward to watching this again and really like watching it, like going through with a fine tooth comb to see like all the different little bits. Cause like I was appreciating so much of the writing while I watched it, but I think a second viewing, kind of knowing what to expect, will be fascinating. Speaking of which, I can't remember the name of the actress, but the one that plays her boss.
Oh God, Michaela Watkins.
What, yeah. Thank you. Yes. What a fucking treat. She's so good. You know,
yeah. Michaela Watkins is amazing. She's just like, fantastic. She's just, some people have that, like in just that inner timing. That like, you know, like there's a 100 hack comics that try to do the Zach Galifianakis Between Two Ferns thing.
Yeah.
But there's only one Zach Galifianakis. Like, there are a lot of people that try to do that overly eager, just a step above 10 to 11, 11 and a half thing that Michaela Watkins can do. And like 99 of them fail at it. And like, there's a magic to be able to like, to not make that so irritating or grating, that kind of approach to doing stuff. And she just like vibrates. it's like to watch her.
Yeah, well, like in Wanderlust, she's in that movie for 5 minutes, but every single thing she says makes me laugh out loud.
She just completely owns whatever scene she's in. Well, also that ad campaign that she's mad about at the beginning is so fucking good.
Like, I think that ad campaign would actually work.
Oh, absolutely. That's another just fun, shocking bit.
That would have got me on Facebook. Also, Michaela Watkins is playing Andy McDowell as Rogue.
Yes.
No shit.
Well, I love it. See, and she's only on SNL for a season. And like much like Tim Robinson, where you're like, your humor is better served elsewhere. But like, sure, she had this character on Weekend Update that was like this like basement movie critic, and it's sort of like, and so they're, you know, Colin just asking her like, what do you think about this? What do you think about this? And it's sort of like, I'm just, Deep Rising sucks, and then they go to the hooded thing, like sipping the Mountain Dew, and she goes, what did you rate it? It's like, bitch, please. And so like, we have been saying that on our household for years. It's like, bitch, please. It's like, oh, for fuck's sake, Michaela Watkins. Like, just so that was a joyful thing. And her, the energy that she does in that reminds me, the one that reminded me the most of, reminded me of Alan Tudyk in Knocked Up, where the whole thing about like, oh, you can talk about pregnancy and like baby stuff and babies, nothing too gross. And then you can like tighten it up. Like between now and then you can tighten it up, like tighten it a little bit. And it's like, it's that thing of just like you don't have a personality or a intellect, but somehow you're into this position of power. How the fuck? But
she gave me, what's the name? Amy Sedaris vibes.
Yeah.
In like the best possible way, not like a, oh, you're just aping this other performer, but in like, oh, you're equally as good at this type of thing. And it was just I should go back and watch Strangers with Candy.
I think though also at the very beginning when it's establishing how it's going to go about things, it seems like it could go wrong. Like that opening scene is really, really damn funny, where the couple just kind of reveals themselves to be kind of the worst people you ever want to meet. And then you kind of woohoo when they get dispatched because it's in fun and creative ways. And then you go, oh yeah, but I've seen this one a lot. Like this movie hate all the people and we just cheer for them to die. And they're just all various stripes of horrible people. But he's got that sincerity and that like good-heartedness that kicks in almost immediately after that. Because like everybody else is great, her friend is great, she's great. The Mason Gooding is just this fountain of charisma.
Did not realize that was Cuba Gooding Jr.'s kid.
So good. Well, I didn't either, and I feel like you were just waiting to spring that on me.
No, I happened to be on the Wikipedia, and I was like, "What the fuck?
Well, how come his last name isn't Gooding Jr. then?"
Who understands the arcane ways that naming conventions work?
Right.
The other, but so
that's
like
wild.
But going back into the humor part of it too, like there's parts of that opening sequence with the proposal where you get like, you know, because the you get fiance with big dumb hats, which is always the visual cue that you're dealing with somebody who's vapid and awful, and that whole bit, and it's just like, it's like, okay, I'm appreciating the fact that you're skewing big dumb hat because like that makes me kind of happy. But then they go into a different kind of humor where once things start to happen and you bring in Jordana Brewster and Devon Sawa, where the fucking thing, the Hobbs and Shaw, and she just goes like Fast and Furious, like the movie, the look on Devon Sawa's face, like it was just, it's like the term I'm gonna apply to this, I've heard other places, like an overbred golden retriever. Just kind of like looks at her like, what? Hobbs, Fast, what? I don't.
Yeah. He just, this dude hasn't seen a movie since Smokey and the Bandit.
And then then later on, the one character says something, and he just goes, were you being sarcastic? Oh God. So like that whole bit. And what I love about that is that they take the sting off of these, like the dour police interrogation room and like the poorly lit police hallway and stuff, which we've seen in 100 other things. And you're like, okay, fine. I get that this is going to be a bad, whatever. And they take the sting off of it and they make it, they change the dynamic a bit, which is great. Cause then it's like, you don't get so bogged down and like, if it's gonna, the tone's not going to work. And so it's like, okay, great. That works beautifully. And then as we're going along, you just sort of have to like, you just kind of strap in and go. Like, it's just one of those ones you're just like, I'm just on board 10,000%. Like, let's just see what happens. Like, overly ridiculous police receptionist lady, the weird love earth aura hippie weirdos at the drive-in. Like, just everything you're going to get. Okay, good. All right, cool. Let's roll with it. I got it. We're good. Let's do it. Let's do it. And let's just, and partly just because these two characters are so goddamn enjoyable to watch and like just be with for this whole story. It just made it very, very enjoyable in that regard.
I don't remember exactly. Maybe you guys will. I swear the first time I saw a trailer for this, I thought it looked kind of generic. And I think Carr even asked me if I was going to see it, and I was like, ah, I'll probably wait till it's streaming.
Yeah, I did too. The first teaser was very much like...
Was it? Okay, like a... so there was a different trailer, because then I saw the full trailer before something, and I came home and was like, nope, I'm wrong. I'm going to go see that movie. There's something happening there that is letting me know it might be good. So whoever did the trailers for them, the teaser wasn't great, but fuck that. The full trailer, I think, sold this perfectly without giving away everything in such a way that I was primed to think this would be good, and then it fully exceeded my expectations, which is so nice to encounter.
yeah, no, you're totally right, because that was that first teaser. It just looked like one more kind of gimmicky slasher thing, and I'm like, well, I'll see it, but I'm like, okay, fine. And then, yeah, the actual trailer, you're like, wait a minute.
Yeah,
this seems like a different deal. I'm like, oh, okay.
But it didn't overplay its hand either. I thought that I thought that was a great example of, like, much like the trailer for Cuckoo that was so good. It's just gave you exactly what you need.
And, you know, if Jordana Brewster just wants to become the next Barbara Crampton and just keep making weird horror movies where she makes big, weird choices, I'm super into that.
I love the dynamic too of, like, I love the dynamic too of the her and the guy, the other, you know, their kind of partner in crime or whatever else, and like he is just like he can't operate in society, like he's I don't understand this, it's like judgmental of those people with like mental issues, because there's plenty of people that have mental issues that do just fine. This is a different thing. This is a different, he can't operate, he, I don't think he could tie his shoes necessarily.
Yeah, but this is the kind of person that only exists in movies.
Yeah, and it's like, but that works great, because you're like, he can present as normal, and then you kind of like, as she does, but then they can't help themselves. They can't, you know, she can't, I mean, by the third act, Jordana Brewster's character is coming out of her own skin because she can't hold it in any longer. And it's like, oh, I love it. I love that.
Can we just highlight that moment when she's like, oh, so you're a couple? And I go, okay, yeah, of course, multiple killers. That makes perfect sense. That's the Scream archetype. And then she goes, no, a thruple.
Yeah.
And then there's this other dude who is clearly the third wheel in the relationship. And is being
because that was the one of the moments where I was like, absolute oh, no, don't boy. Ruin this. Yeah. And then it was perfect. Yeah.
Yeah. Gorgeous.
So
the only thing I could say is that the last, you know, 20 minutes, it felt like it was trying to end, you know, and kind of going Return of the King route to it. And I think it's just because it had a horror movie and a romantic comedy to wrap up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But there was a little bit of dragginess there, but nothing that should stop any right thinking person.
Pretty minor quibble. Yeah.
Yeah. The level up from Hoot is blast, I think.
Yes. Okay, good.
This is a blast. Like, it's kind of dumb, but it is smart dumb. It is dumb in all the right ways, and it's got just such a good heart and eyes. So, you know, anything with Chris Landon's name on it, I'm going to come out for, but I'm happy to see that, like, that, you know, and there's a whole crew that worked on this, and it just turned out beautifully. So for me, I would say it's 8.5 out of 10. Damn it, don't use This Year's Love by David Gray, ironically, because that is one of my favorite songs for a relationship. But, you know, I felt like they were also sincere in their, you know, irony.
Nice.
Yeah, that was another thing in this one that just rules is the music cues. Like, it just, you know, I really admire that anytime anybody just really takes that seriously, because, like, if you can get it right, it's awesome. Like, it's awesome.
I'll be curious to see how history looks back on the needle drop era of filmmaking, because it is certainly oversaturated at this point. But it, when it is done well, which is also one of the most stupid things to say, when it's done well, I like it. But there are still people that pull it off, you know. I just a titch higher than Josh. I'm at 9 out of 10 on this. This was a blast, as I've learned now. this was just, it was super fun. It exceeded my expectations. And again, yeah, this is just people I like to watch in anything, and having a bunch of them in one movie. I mean, at this point, like, Devon Sawa is like your cool uncle that unfortunately lives like halfway across the country, so you don't get to see him as often as you'd like. So anytime he pops up, I'm like, hell yeah, maybe he brought me something. So, yeah. 9 out of 10.
Yeah, I'm gonna be right there. I'm gonna be right there with Matt. I just walked out of the theater like, God, that fucking ruled. Like, it's just like, I walked out, I was like, that was so much fun. Partly because of the romantic comedy aspect balanced beautifully with the slasher stuff, and there's, you know, there's some pretty bloody kind of moments in this and some stuff. But it's also shot really well, and like it looks great. Like, it really looks great. Like, it has a great, it just, the feel of it is awesome. So, like, that part of it works really, really well, too. They don't overplay. They don't overstay their welcome in terms of humor stuff. And, like, the chemistry of the two leads is just phenomenally great. So, I just, you know, and then on top of everything else, just on a personal level, it's like, you know, Josh Rubin, the guy who directed this, like, he's, you know, he did that movie Scare Me, which I didn't really like. I'm in the minority with that one. Like, a lot of people are like, oh, that was great. I'm like, I did not like that one so much. But then Werewolves Within, I like more. And then this is the one, this is the next one after that. And I was like, it's like, oh, buddy, you're, this is great. you know, not because, you know, Charlie's affections are what really matter for his career, but it's sort of like, you know, it's trending in the direction that makes me very happy. So I was like, oh, cool. But yeah, no, I enjoyed this. I wish it had gotten even a bigger response, but I do feel like this is going to be one of those ones, much like Happy Death Day or Spontaneous, that just keeps its place.
I can see this having a long tail. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, it just, and
it's one of those, God forbid, this would have been released in October. But
yeah, for fuck's sake, it's just like, it's one of those things where, because if this was a PG, so like, think about it, I was thinking about this, and like, if this was a PG-13 slasher plus romantic comedy, like, they do everything else right, but instead of being R, it's PG-13, and they dial back some of the extreme levels of gore at certain parts of this, and like, maybe you get more of the casual people for the Valentine's
Day. Yeah, it might take over the world at that point. Yeah,
but it's like, I that was not the movie they're gonna make, and so it's just sort of like, you know, I do have a lot of hope that it's gonna have that long tail as you described, because like I said, I thought this was really, really terrific, and just done so well in so many ways, and just like really, really enjoy the shit out of it. So yeah, I'd say 9 out of 10. 9 out of 10. I told you I had a thing with blood. Vomiting all over the dead body. Just like, that should not be funny, but I was just cackling, laughing. I was sitting in the theaters like laughing. Like, oh God, that is so funny. So yeah, just thanks to everybody involved with this. This is a terrific, terrific movie.
Hey, we'll take a moment and I'll come back with our other two. Next up, we've got Your Monster, or Tu Monstruo. This is a story about a woman who is undergoing cancer treatment, and her boyfriend, who is writing a musical for her, breaks up with her because just hanging around while she has cancer is a drag.
It's too hard.
So. Yeah, so he's the worst. And so she ends up back in her mother's house, which she finds is now kind of taken over by the monster who used to live in her closet. And he looks honestly like a guy that I wouldn't look twice at in the street.
He's close enough to Teen Wolf that he seemed kind of familiar and comforting.
He passes, like, it's almost like if Ron Perlman from the Beauty and the Beast series shaved.
Yeah. I mean, I worked at a Renaissance Festival. This guy is someone I couldn't have had a beer with.
Like, seriously, though, like, I don't think I would look twice. I would maybe go, oh, that guy's got something weird with his nose.
But yeah, that's about it, yeah.
Part of the strangeness of this film. And of course the monster wants to kick her out at first. He's more of like a dick than like a brooding, volatile man in the like Jane Austen mold. He's just kind of a douchebag for a while. But then, you know, they find themselves drawing closer together, and maybe her home life is going to seep into her work life and things are going to go poorly, because she then takes the humiliating position of being like the member of the chorus, and while she watches somebody else play the character that was written for her.
I think they let her be understudy, well, which is like the equivalent of, oh dude, you can ref. Like,
yeah, sucks. Here's the Wiimote, collect star bits. Yeah,
exactly. It's a more apt metaphor now, I suppose.
And I guess in describing this, I realize that I haven't yet said that this has at least three movies worth of tone that it switches back and forth, to the point where I got really tired of what it was doing. So in the beginning, we have a really broad tone where there's these heavy things happening. You know, she's almost dying of cancer. Her boyfriend kicks her out. But she does like the spoiled girl cry in the Disney Channel movie.
Mm-hmm.
So if she were sobbing, you know, like I know Melissa Barrero could do, that feels different. But she is like full Charlie Brown mouth, wah, ha, 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 ha. And it's like broader than Bridget Jones. And it's just like, okay, so here's where we're at. And then the monster comes in and he's an asshole. And that's funny for a little bit and annoying for a little bit. But then he is required to be like tender and interesting. And then he's just kind of a cool guy that you hang out with. And we have a romantic comedy tone for a while. And then at the end, it tries to be more of a horror movie than it has been up to that point, which is not at all. But it still got some really just through the fucking roof acting from Barrero. Like her final confrontation with Jacob is just like, God, what are you thinking? What is mad at you?
I'm going to ask the court reporter.
Right. Like, I know you can make your face right. And then the last 5 minutes are fucking infuriating. So I could not get my arms around this. And there's like a really sweet 20-minute short in here where it's like, oh, you're the monster from my childhood. Oh, you're a dick. Oh, we're bonding. And there may be something there that wasn't there before and seen. And the rest of it just was, I found very frustrating.
I think I lean more towards where you're at, Josh. But so Charlie, you liked it more though, right?
Yeah, I'm
curious
kind of
to hear
like,
your take then. Yeah.
So I kind of like what Josh was describing about the like the thing where the guy keeps showing up, the Amazon guy keeps showing up with the tissues, like that whole bit where you know that whole part of it, I sort of thought it was sort of like it was establishing the idea that like this is going to be, a lot of this is going to present like real life, but it's like kind of more tangential to real life sort of a thing, like that was sort of the way that it was kind of presenting itself, on top of the fact that like, you know, I'm just a caveman, but like one of the most fantastical things about this thing was that pencil neck dipshit would ever think about dumping Melissa Barrera. Like it's like, okay. Like,
yeah. Look, so your suspension of disbelief was destroyed in the first 5 minutes.
Yeah, it was like, I'm like, okay, you know, you mildly talented twerp, like, come on, man. Like, so like, all right, we'll set that aside and, you know, whatever. And then the thing with the monster, I actually really liked the idea that there wasn't necessarily an ulterior motive established initially. It was more than just like, he's just irritating and like this kind of, he's like the 30-year-old character where like everybody's moving on with their life and he's just sort of like, nah, I'm just like he would be his personality would work in like a Clerks movie. And it was sort of like that was
that's
sort of
the him. Other question, like I want you to finish what you're saying, but also ponder how different is this movie if he is just a guy who's squatting in her house? And what does that mean for the rest of the movie? But go ahead on your train.
So that you kind of have that settle in, and it is fun to sort of watch like the scene where she's eating the orange chicken, and he's like, oh, did that come from this place? Like, yeah, it's pretty good. Yeah, but I don't want any though. Like,
yeah,
you know, like whatever. And she's like, oh, I'll make you play. Like, no, I mean, I'm not gonna like. And he's like, ah, order some more. I love little bits like that. They're really funny.
Honestly, I think part of my problem with this movie is the way that he talks in the douchebag scenes, because I think it's a very familiar,
yeah,
kind of douchebag. It's like the Vince Vaughn model that's just kind of been the douchebag kind of dipshit guy, like maybe a Jason Lee kind of guy, but TJ Miller. But it's just like, well, you know, it's not like I want chicken. It's not like I don't need to have any.
And you're kind of stupid for even thinking it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not going to like say that I want to touch you or anything, because I don't. And I wouldn't. Maybe I, but I'm not gonna. And it's just, it's a familiar type and one that is, it's just like, I'm done with it.
And his most irritating, like, the sad thing is, Josh, the most, at his most irritating, he reminds me the most of Zach Johnson.
Maybe that's why I could
actually,
not.
That makes perfect sense to me. And it also makes perfect sense to me.
I'm not trying to be a dick, but like that was literally, that was the reference point. I'm like,
you know, like, that's the what cadence reminded me, is honestly. Actually similar. That could be it.
I would,
God, I'm sorry.
I would credit that for making it harder for me to enjoy this movie.
Well, I mean, we all have those things, right? I mean, that's perfectly legitimate.
Yeah.
You know, like anything that has a redhead who's kind of a bitch.
Vapid, you know? Yeah. It's like, oh, ouch, yeah. pain.
We've
pain,
all got
pain,
a couple
pain,
of
pain.
Sore spots, yeah.
But yeah, like, there's the improv dialogue that worked real well for Judd Apatow, you know, and like Wanderlust, I still absolutely love it and had some of that in it. But now when you hear it, it seems a little dated and it's kind of grating on the ear. Mm-hmm. And like this guy, it's kind of the same thing that in Severance, Dylan G talks like Jonah Hill from Superbad.
Yeah.
A character that's been done a dozen times and it's like, I hate him.
Well, it's like when you see a Jason Mewes lookalike.
And you're like, come on, guy. What are you doing? So, yeah. And I can see if he is not as irritating at the beginning, then maybe it doesn't feel as like, oh, so now he's going to become a different person completely so that they can be cute together.
Because once they get comfortable with each other, not necessarily like fully into like romance, but just like, okay, they're just legit friends. They have a comfortable rapport, you know, like night. And he goes and crawls under the bed and like night. Like they're just like comfortable roommates. Like I actually enjoyed that. That was like the sweet spot for me where the acting is less insane and they're both likable at that point, to the point where when we get to the ending, I expected something in a much more traditional, like rom-com resolution. Mm-hmm. And it would be more about like, you know, the magic was in you. The real treasure was the friends we made along the way, which is a little corny or whatever, but like it would have fit that tone for that middle section if that had been how we ended. Which I think is part of why I really did not like the ending, because I wrestled with it. And by the time we get to that performance, I was like, you know what? If this is just going to have kind of a sweet resolution, I'm okay with that. I think this movie's earned it. And then it just turns into like little sudden bloodbath. And I was like, oh, well, now that doesn't jive with where I felt like I've been going this whole time. And I just felt betrayed for like finally finding a place where I thought I could comfortably, you know, percolate with this movie. And it kind of was a rug pull at the end. I don't know. Did that not bother you, Charlie? Or was that?
That was the one. So that's like the one part really that like it's the last little bit there reminded me a little bit of that Ryan Reynolds movie, The Voices, where it was sort of like, and all of a sudden you go like, this was a little worse than we were led to believe it was. And it's like, that's so. And that did that. So I wasn't like the biggest fan of that part of it. And then it got me to thinking of being like, is the monster its own thing, or is it really like this, like a bucket for like her, like insecurities and like, you know, less than desirable qualities and characteristics or whatever else, especially because like all the stuff like her mom, like, you know, kind of taking off and not being around and this, that, whatever, like was the monster sort of like this like reflecting pool for like all the kind of the more negative heavy kind of things. And so like he just only he exists just to the extent that like it's like this not sounding board, but just like a resource or like a reservoir for all that stuff. And then it like comes out in the end, sort of like when she's the one who kind of stabs him to death with the ruler. It's sort of like, you know, it's like you think it's the monster that does this, and it's like it's her doing it. And it's like, because it's sort of like part of her kind of a thing.
I think they would have had to sprinkle that in a little more, but I could also see that being, yeah, if the monster we find out is just a metaphor of her being in conversation with herself in a, you know, stressful time to the point of breaking, that I think that's a valid way to tell that story. Not that I'm the person that should be the arbiter of what is or is not a valid story, but you know what I mean? Like, I think I could have, with enough breadcrumbs, accepted that as an ending too, of like, well, she had this monster that she had at first. When you're first angry at someone, your reactions are hyperbolic and irregular and whatever. And as she's getting more calm, he is also getting more calm. Like, that metaphor would work, but that doesn't work with the ending we're given, because you do have him going, ooh, that was pretty crazy. I'm like, well, fuck.
Because, like because, and then, like, this is the thing that I'm going to just have to keep saying until everyone is super sick of it. But what I love about horror is that you make the metaphor real.
Right.
Of course, the monster is a metaphor for her grief and her anger and her abandonment. Like, of fucking course it is. How stupid would we have to be to not pick up on that? You don't need a scene where she's just standing in an empty room talking to herself. And they're like, oh, look, everyone, the monster was a metaphor for her grief the whole time. Like, fuck you. It can be an actual monster. Like, it can be the Babadook was a metaphor for her grief and her ambivalence about being a mom. But it was also a real creature that existed in that world that she had to deal with and interact with.
Right.
And why would you fucking do it any other way? And when you're making a horror movie and a fanciful horror movie, to bring it back to, like, just kidding. Of course, there's not anything supernatural going on in our horror movie, kids. It's just sad. She's just real sad. And so
it's weirdly, it's the kind of nihilism that isn't fun, maybe.
Yeah, it's like making a live action Lion King where none of the animals can move their mouths and there's not any color in the world. Like, yes, this is more realistic. So it sucks.
You know? Turns out we create art to get away from the world.
Why are you so tethered to realism that you have to explain that, oh no, there was no monster. It was just her, like, sitting on the couch pouring wine for two people. Like, no. Just have the courage of your convictions to see how the story with the monster plays out.
I think the monster still exists, though.
I felt like his little aside when she's killed people indicates that he is part of the world.
Think so at all. I thought it was just like she thought the monster was coming to kill the guy, and really it was her that killed the guy. And then in her head is still the monster, but he goes, oh, that was pretty extreme. That pissed me off too. But I really read it as, oh no, he's just, nobody else can see him.
I mean, it's entirely possible that that's the case. I don't know. It gave you this strange thing of like, they essentially just switch perspectives over the course of the film, right? And so, like, you start out as these opposites that don't get along. They meet in the middle as they're crossing paths, and they end up on opposite ends of the spectrum again, just each one on the other side. And it's like, well, then no one learned anything. nothing was resolved. We just watched these two people faff about for 90 minutes.
Like, that was kind of the one bummer, though. Like, the phrase you just said was my one bummer takeaway was that, you know, like, once he realizes it was, like, the friends, that was the one that was hooking up with the director dipshit, and whatever. I feel like just right prior to that, she had kind of recognized that this idiot guy is just not worth her time. And, like, I'm just done with this fool, and, like, I'm going to move on and whatever else. And then it was like, but then here's one more piece of data, and then she just, that's kind of put her over the edge. And it was sort of like, and it was because of bummer. So, like, she had, like, this level of self-realization, which was awesome. And then it was like that one, that part of it kind of put it over the edge. And she just kind of became like, kind of just sort of, you know, last train of Clarksville at that point. And it's like, that was the one kind of a bummer. Cause, like, if you're going to root it more in reality, it's a bummer that like the one last bit of data is what kind of sends it off into kind of more into that, like, voices territory, you know, sort of where it goes like, whoa, this is way more extreme than I thought it was going to be. So, like, that last 15 minutes-ish doesn't necessarily feel like it jives with the rest of it, you know, per se. which I mean, you know, I mean, it's everybody's miles are going to vary as far as that goes. But on the overall, like, you know, there's a lot of this that I really, a lot of this that I enjoyed. And I thought, honestly, going into this, I was like, once we were 5 minutes in, that it's like, oh, aspiring Broadway actors, this, that, whatever else. I'm like, oh God, fucking theater people. Jesus
that
Christ.
Does remind me, actually, I was pleasantly surprised by the whole, like, oh, sure, he's fucking the new lead, blah, blah, blah. And then you have that moment where you see the new lead, is it Jackie? Finds out, like, well, of course she's being weird because you're fucking her boyfriend and he wrote this for her and he gave you the lead instead. And she's like, what the fuck? I knew none of that. We're not fuck. And I was like, oh, awesome. We have a movie where you don't have to have two female characters that gotta hate each other because there's a man in the room. Like, they actually managed to do the much smarter and more interesting take on that of like, oh, hell yeah. Like, they actually have, like, common ground now. This really, really made me happy. But then it just kind of is there for that minute and then sort of doesn't matter. So, because I was thinking, part of me thinking it would have like the rom-com ending would be, you know, opening night, curtain goes up and they just switch places without telling him. And huzzah, like he can't change the performance because they're already at intermission and the woman, it was strong enough to step back from the role to give her a thing she feels she deserved. She gets to prove she had the chops for it. And they both live happily ever after, neither one of them needing this asshole. That's a good ending. Yeah.
And but, she can take a bow on the stage and look and see the monster waiting in the wings.
Or maybe he evaporates if you want to go Disney with it, you know? Like, she no longer needs him. Has to go haunt Fred Savage's bedroom.
Well, yeah, like, he either waves and fades into the shadows or gives her a hug, and we don't see ever him from the audience perspective, so we don't know.
Yeah.
I feel like there were ways. But I also just think blowing out the tone so broad in the beginning made it hard to recalibrate for the rest of it.
And it, that is true. No, that's very fair. Yeah, that's very fair.
There were a lot of things that I liked about it. The whole middle bit with the canoodling, that was lovely. I actually was interested in that, the Broadway show that they were making, because I always love seeing that happen in a movie and, like, the music was good, like, from where I was sitting. I would have gone to see it.
This popped into my head, and I can't rob you guys of this, Jim. The tone is like if the movie started by the Farrelly brothers and then tried to end as the Coen brothers. Get it? Oh. Get it? That's pretty good, huh? That was worth stopping everything.
That's not bad at all.
Yes.
Clap.
Good. Yes, I will now go kill myself.
Golf clap. I'm trying to see if that's one of those like Irish wristwatch kind of things.
It's hard to treat.
I would be very curious to see, and I've not seen it, so I don't know. I'd be very curious to see if I could find her Carolyn Dundee's short of this.
Yeah, so I'm digging around for it. I'm not finding it, but I would be fascinated to watch that.
Yeah, I'm just curious if like if that's the thing where like if because sometimes when people try to take a short and expand it, you do get a lot of different ideas and ways to be able to kind of broaden things. And it's like, you know, then you have like things like Mama, which I'm on the side of it that thinks that they did a great job with Mama. And then like, you know, Lights Out was what it was. And then, or like, Cargo was another one that they turned into a feature length thing, which I thought was interesting because they just turned it into like a really big bummer. And it was just like, good on them. Like, they made it a very heavy emotional drama.
It wasn't exactly the happiest short.
No, it wasn't the happiest short to begin with necessarily. But I would be very curious to see like what was the, because in a short, you really kind of have, you know, you don't have a lot of space to move. So it's like, I'd be curious to see like what was the thing that was highlighted there, or like what, you know, what got put on top of it to kind of, you know, expand it out or whatever. So it's been kind of curious about that part of it. And like the last thing I wanted to say super fast was that the thing that it kept reminding me of was like, you know, the ending part where you're like, well, that just doesn't really feel like it fits the thing or whatever. There was this one that came out like 4 or 5 years ago. It was at one of the festivals. I think it was a Panic or it was Chattanooga or one of them. It might have been Chattanooga, I think. But it was a movie called Jumbo. And it was this movie, it was from, I'm trying to remember where the hell it was made. I think it was either Belgian or French or one of those. And it's about this lady who, like she's working at an amusement park and she falls in love with, like, a like amusement park ride. And
I've
heard of that. Yeah.
There's a lot of it that I really loved. There's a lot of that I really loved, but it also is like just layered and layered with like all this dire Steinbeckian like awfulness in this lady's life. And then at a certain point, you kind of realize that, like, you hit the third act, and you're like, okay, now she's going to realize this, and then she's going to realize that she's worth this, and then she's going to move on from this. And it's like, okay, true, but then we're not going to learn anything, and then she's just going to continue being nuts. And you're like, man, but you told me that you were going down this pathway, and then it just sort of stopped in a very French way. And it's like, and so the ending of this somehow kind of reminded me of Jumbo, where it was like, instead of her taking the realization that, you know, fake friend and dipshit ex-boyfriend are not worth the time, which is a thing that she figured out in the movie, didn't actually, like, wasn't the resolution of the movie. So that kind of bummed me out a little bit. Like, it just, because I didn't really like really the rest of it, but that was just like this thing that just sort of felt like, you took the wrong lesson for your own story, Ed Burnett.
Yeah, I am impressed looking at the Wikipedia here. This whole thing was shot in 20 days. Jesus, that's crazy fast. And yeah, it made money. So
it's well made for sure.
Yeah, the craft is there.
I feel like some of the stuff rings real true, like throughout the middle of it. I always love to see a woman directing and writing and telling a story in a way that I wouldn't tell it, you know, but. For me, like, 2/4 of this is a 6. Maybe 1/4 is an 8 and 1/4 is a 4. Hmm. And when you put those all together and divide by 4, you get 6. So that seems a little high to me, but I'll go for it. I'll see.
Yeah,
I will give it a 6 out of 10 tales as old as times, dudes hanging out in your house.
I'm actually really surprised at how high up you are on that. I had a really good time talking about it with you two, which is the highest compliment I can probably give the movie. That, and then the scene with the two women realizing they're not actually in competition. That's great.
That was an excellent scene.
That's fantastic. But I was so angry at this movie for just never quite picking a lane that I enjoyed for long enough to come together. And then the ending really just was like, maybe I just had a poopy diaper that day, but like, it really was just like awful. And so I walked out of this going like, you know, this is like a 2 out of 10 for me. Cause it's just, took me forever to get into it. And then as soon as I got into it, they took it away from me. And then I was starting to come to terms with that. And then they just kind of shit in my cereal at the end. And they kind of went like, ta-da. And it's like, saying ta-da did not make it better. So yeah, I was bummed by this, and maybe it's because it got close to being something that I think I would have really appreciated, and I'm more mad at the missed opportunity, but I was mad about it.
I'm mad about you.
Aw, I get to be Paul Reiser.
Oh, hey, well,
that
actually
Paul Reiser.
Yeah, oh yeah, that's Paul Reiser and Helen Hunt.
Yeah, I can't aspire to Helen Hunt. I can only be Paul Reiser.
Well, and if you do like Paul Reiser, his first stand-up special in 30 years was rentable, and now it's just on Prime. And so like to see the wonderful Paul Reiser get up and kind of amuse about getting older, and he still has the same goddamn timing that's so perfect.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the material, you know, it's an older crowd, it's an AARP kind of level of material, but he still has his rhythm and his way of speaking and thinking, and it's just like, I fucking love that guy. And so it's worth watching, because like I said, Paul Reiser rules. This is just one of those things that we're like, you know, like maybe some things didn't harm me as much as other things, even though I really did. That ending kind of just bugged me, and I was surprised as anyone that I wasn't just crawling out of my skin with irritation with a bunch of fucking theater people. So it was like, you know, that, you know, I was surprised as anybody else, and I kind of enjoyed the kind of the evolution of the characters in the middle part of the thing. And like Melissa Barrera just exudes like light. So you just watch her in anything, she's fantastic. So it's sort of like, you know, I mean, by and large, I think it was like, it's, I really wish to God I could get a hands on the short. I'd be very curious to see what the, like the origin, like the core, the center of the Tootsie Pop of the story is, and to see what that was. But as it stands, I did like it overall. There's a lot that I really did like, so I will be the high man on the total bowl here, and I'm going to say 7. Say 7 out of 10. 7 out of 10. The way that the Amazon guy gives her a hug is the fucking best. Like, he's like, hands are like turned outward, like his wrists are up, kind of a thing. Like, yeah. He's like
if there is anyone watching, I want that to be clear.
Like, patting his her back, like with like the upturned part of his wrists. Like, that's just like just phenomenally great. So yeah, mixed bag of nuts out of 10 there.
Aren't we all just mixed up nut sacks?
From the mixed up nut sacks of Mrs. Basil E. Frank.
When you said nut sacks, Josh, I don't know if you guys, do you guys know this, the stand-up comedian Zoltan Kolsas? Do you know him at all?
No.
He does basically clean kind of stuff. He's Hungarian origin, but he like immigrated to the United States when he was young, and so he has kind of a funny way of speaking a little bit of times, like the way his manner of speaking is, but he's generally a pretty clean comedian, but he's a really good storyteller. But he talks about like when he got married but he had this testicle pain off and on for like years, and his wife was like, no, you have to go get that checked out. He's like, yeah, but the pain, I have a 7-day rule, and after a couple of days the pain goes away, and so then if it comes back, then the clock starts again. She's like, no, that's stupid, you're gonna go see a doctor. But then they're talking about, like, you know, as they're going to the doctor, she says something like, oh, I wonder if they have to cut it off or something like that. He's like, what? I hadn't thought about that at this point. Why would you say that? And he's like, what if you put like a fake one in there? Like, well, I would hope they would have something. I wouldn't walk out with a half a grocery sack. that description has been rattling around my brain for like a week. It's like, but if you get a chance to ever look him up, he's got a lot of specials, like full specials you can find on YouTube, and it's really fascinating because he's not one of these comedians that, like, when he was younger, he had like one style and one sort of way, and now he's like a different kind of a person. He's the same guy, he just has aged, and like, mm-hmm. and so it's kind of cool to see somebody who just has a genuineness about them, mm-hmm. become, you know, like, go through life. And it's like, so it's, I really like him. Zoltan Kolsas, he's really, really enjoyable. Really enjoyable guy. I think he's an excellent stand-up comedian. But anyway, that's the end of there. We should give the last movie.
We should.
Yeah, we have a humanist vampire seeking consensual suicidal person. I have no interest at all in translating that to Spanish.
Yeah, no, don't even. No, I don't want to hurt yourself.
But so I think, not to be glib, but I think this movie is Let the Right One In, only with Amelie.
I feel like, have you not seen Amelie? That sounds right.
Yeah, Amelie is about like a delightfully twee French lady who just kind of goes about her life with joy and wonder, and makes everyone's life better in like very adorable French ways. And this has that, like, or like if Wes Anderson made Let the Right One In.
Yeah, that's a great description.
Like, it's. So the story is a young woman from a family of vampires hasn't yet made her first kill, and it's kind of the failure to launch syndrome, right? She's still living in mom and dad's basement, still drinking blood out of Capri Sun packs, right? And she doesn't want to kill anyone, but then she meets someone who seems to genuinely want to die, to the point where death might be a gift to him, but she sticks around just long enough to kind of fall for him. And I don't know, like, it's real cute. I'm not sure it amounts to much, but it's real cute.
I think it is. I liked this. It reminded me of, and I think there's more than one movie with this title, so I don't know if I'm, it's either
not this title.
No, not that. No, good point. Thank you. that's an important song. Semicolon. there's a movie called either Bottle Rocket or Bottle Rockets, and I know there's like five or something.
Anderson. Yeah,
is the one with the little kid that just camps out on the girl's lawn all summer.
Oh, that's Moonrise Kingdom.
Nope.
No,
this is like, I watched this in like 1997.
That's Wes Anderson's first one, right? Bottle Rocket.
Well, Bottle Rocket is Wes Anderson's first movie, yeah.
Okay. But maybe it's not the same. I don't know. But it's a movie I saw like in high school where this kid is in love with this girl, you know, a la 80s John Cusack style, and decides he will camp out on her lawn all summer until she agrees to go on a date with him. And they end up, of course, you know, as she's coming and going with her boyfriend and dates, they end up like talking at night as she's just sitting in her bedroom and he's sitting on the lawn. And it's this really small, cute story about these two people that are just kind of fun to be around, and the stakes are low, and you just kind of are rooting for both of them, and you leave kind of feeling like a warm, fuzzy feeling. And that's sort of what I ended up with here. Like, it's probably not going to blow the doors off any theater it's played in, but like, I just was sort of having a good time chilling with this one for a while. It was kind of a nice, like, it was an easy watch for me, I guess.
So that, yeah, this is another one that we just, you know, it's an interesting thing. Cause like there's parts of this that I liked, but I was amazed when I, cause I always get my computer set up when we're going to record. And then I pull up the information about the movies. And then I was surprised to find out that this movie was 91 minutes long. Cause I thought it was 5 hours. Because like, there are parts, there are scenes, there are individual scenes that I really, really, really liked a lot. And that, but it's like, there's a lot of very French Canadian sort of like very stilted things that I just sort of like the first time we interact with the rest of the family, I was like, I found it very entertaining. And like by the fifth time, I'm like, I just, all of them just are so annoying. Like I was very irritated by all of them. And our cute little fella is like, I liked him in parts of it, but then the other parts of it, like it feels very French in the sense that like, he's just being beaten down by all these things and blah. And it's like, gosh, darn man. Like, the thing with the cheese and the shoes and the all of it, like, god dang, like, just man alive. So I don't know, like, there's a lot of parts of little bits of this that I really liked, but I just felt it was very inert and like very like slow moving.
Awesome. Yeah, move into the mic if you can. Try to, you got very quiet.
Oh, Jesus, I'm sorry. Oh,
there he is.
I moved it to take a sip of my water, then not move it back. I apologize. Did you hear any of that?
I did. Yeah, I don't know if the recording did all that.
I heard it. Probably. I can save it.
So I mean, like I said, I'm not one of the things I'm not mad at necessarily. I just kind of like, there's a lot of this where I just kind of felt like it had some charm. There's some charming moments. And then it was like, but there's a lot of just bleak Frenchness that just sort of like just feels like it takes for an unbelievable amount of time. And then there's parts that are funny, like the thing where she's off screen and you're hearing like the lady that you like picked up some hitchhikers or whatever, and then like, you know, she's just sort of sitting there on her bed like with her record player and her little like quilt and whatever else, and you hear this in the background, like that was really funny. That was a very funny bit. It's like there are parts of this that I really liked. It was just, it was like packed in a cooler with just like a lot of ice and not so many drinks. And it was like, and so that, you know, like I said, I'm not mad at it. It was just like, that was my, I just kept being like, how can we have more time? How is there more time? Okay, I guess we're going to, all right. So like I said, it wasn't like, I'm not mad. It was just more just sort of like, boy, it felt a lot more inert than I think you guys, the one that you guys watched.
Yeah, I had fun with this. I thought it was just kind of consistently wry throughout.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the history of her not wanting to kill is just fantastic. It's like, it's your birthday. We brought you a birthday clown, and he's going to do his whole clown routine. Yeah, we're going to make him do the routine, and then we're going to eat him. And like, that'll be your first kill. And we're like, we didn't expect you to bond with the clown. Like,
yeah. My first note was just, I like this family. Like, I just was enjoying spending time with them. Oh, the only other note I want to make sure, two notes I make sure we talk about. Are you on the same page with me that hearing a whistle at night would never make me move towards that sound?
Oh yeah, no. Yeah, no.
Okay, because I was like, what the fuck is that about?
Fast. Yeah.
Like, then again, I guess as a vampire, I'd be maybe less concerned for my personal safety. But
yeah, fair enough.
And then I meant to look this up, but I forgot to. That song in the credits rules. Whatever the hell that was. I meant to look that up. I will do that at some point. And also, speaking of looking things up, I did look up the movie I'm thinking of. It is not called Bottle Rocket. It's called 8 Days a Week. And the girl that he is crushing on in 1997 is Carrie Russell, which explains why it made such an impact on me.
Yeah, so fair enough.
check out that trailer on IMDb, and you may decide to watch it. It's really cute, really fun. But the bottle rocket part that confused me is the kid describes bottle rockets, I think it's in that movie, as being a thing that doesn't set out to do a lot, but it accomplishes its goal. And therefore, it's valid and worthwhile. And maybe that's kind of the part that was making me think of that movie, is that I feel like this does what it wants to do. It's not aiming for a big spectacle or crazy whatever. It just does what it needs to tell its little story. And it was, I like the little story. So that's my thesis.
Fun with the, just the Jean-Pierre Jeunet of it. Like even though it is technically Quebecois or whatever, it felt
Quebecois.
Very fucking French.
Quebecoisant.
Yeah, le croissant. So ultimately, like this, it just kind of evaporates, leaving nothing but the fresh scent of pine. But I had a good time watching it. Like, my wife enjoyed it. We had some fun stuff. It veers dangerously close to being like, aren't millennials or aren't zennials stupid? But it doesn't quite go there. And so, I don't know. It rides a very thin line of being just twee enough to be fun. So, yeah, like for me, this is, I would say it's like a 7.5 out of 10. Like, it's not going to set the world on fire, but I enjoyed it.
I actually also gave this a 7, but I guess with maybe more enthusiasm. Mm-hmm. Like, but I think
I don't know why I feel so sheepish.
Can't think of a pun with wool. I'm sorry. I just think this is.
Mad.
There you go. Fuck. Damn it. I guess the bottle rocket metaphor works. It's just a nice little thing, you know. It reminded me of another sweet little movie, or like Safe Men, if you've seen that. Tells a small, delightful movie with characters I enjoyed spending time with.
Yeah, I mean, I think maybe what probably needs to happen, I think, is at some point I'll probably need to watch this again, I think, because I just, you know, maybe it was just energy in the tank. Maybe it was just sort of like, you know, I don't know. Who knows? But it's just sort of one of those things where it's just sort of like, I think it was just the inertness that kind of really started to grate on my nerves. And I don't know that it's necessarily as inert that it feels like. It just kind of, you know, for whatever reason, it's just kind of like how you view a thing. So, you know, there's enough in there that I liked, and there's enough things that I thought were clever, and then it's not so much of like, you know, like, oh, you have sentimentality, fuck ye, kind of thing, where it's like, there's not enough of that where I think that would just, you know, make it interminable in a, like a bad way. So I'm going to go kind of middle of the road. I'm just going to say 5. Mm-hmm. I'll say 5 out of 10. There's enough that I liked in there that I think that the fault may lie with the viewer, not the material in this particular case. And I probably will go back and watch this again, just kind of like clear the slate and sort of give it another go around just to see how we do. You know, just because like I said, I think there's enough in there that was quality that they're not leaning too far into that awkwardness kind of nonsense. Where you know, so I'll say 5 out of 10. I'll say 5 out of 10. 5 out of 10. You know, if I want to hold it against the movie, why that little shit that had the birthday party at the bowling alley didn't get a cutback later on where she just gets, you know, obliterated later on would be great. Because God, that little girl, Jesus Christ, like, ugh, 10 out of 10.
What good is your horror movie if you can't introduce annoying people and murder them?
Right.
Yeah, I mean, Jack Frost figured this out.
We all need that catharsis, yeah.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll talk about our things to watch next time. Coming up next week, we have 3 newish movies, or new to us, or new
to you, maybe. Who knows?
A platform. Who knows? As the incredibly ballsy ad campaign said back in the day, if you haven't seen it before, it's new to you.
God,
thank you, network.
That's NBC. Television. Yeah, NBC. Oh, that was NBC.
So right. And
just
yet,
get used to the flavor of the bottom pointless. Of the barrel.
If it weren't for my horse.
Yeah, let's. So we're going to see Night Siren, that's on Shudder, and The Birthday, which is also on Shudder. And then we're going to catch The Mankey, or Monkey, in theaters. Don't go see Monkey Man by mistake. Don't go see Dog Man. and don't go see the cartoon Dog Spaceman, which is not about a dog man that goes to space. Instead, see Night Siren, the Monkey, and the Birthday. And I've been dressed this entire time, and I say, bah.
We will have a short next week, as we do. That short is called Mop. And it will be, Mop. It will be on the website, which is horrorshowhotdog.com, where you can always check out the trailers and shorts for the following episode. And I believe you can also find Mop on the YouTubes. This will be fun. I'm looking forward to seeing what you guys think of this. It's interesting. So, with all that being said, as far as you all know, I've been Matt this entire time, and I'm sorry.
This is Jared Lawson. Take care of yourselves, take care of each other. And if you are so inclined on Prime, we saw it, or it was part of one of the festivals last year, but the documentary about Mike Mignola, Monsters, is now just on Prime regular. So if you have Prime, you just can access it. It's not rental anymore or whatever. And it's lovely. I speak for pretty much everybody, but it's like, I'm an easy mark. I've been a gigantic fan of Mike Mignola's forever, and he's quirky and he's odd and he's gruff at times and a bit of a stick in the mud, but sometimes that makes just amazing artists. So
he's slightly fuzzier Harlan Ellison.
Basically, it's like, you could almost be around him for in the kitchen for an hour and don't feel like you're just.
Yeah, you could have a coffee.
Yeah, but it's a really lovely documentary. I think they did a wonderful job with it, and so that one's on Prime at the moment. So if you get a chance, to definitely check that out for somebody who's a wonderfully creative human being. So anyway, take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and then we'll talk towards you before you can even do anything about it. So we'll talk to you later. Bye bye.
Thank you. I almost lost my whole joke.
We rule.
Such a terrible joke, and I really love it.
My work wife did that one the other day. Sean, you're son of a bitch.
God, when you can get somebody with that who has never heard it, and you do the stomp for the kick drum hit. I mean,
hell yeah.
The key change version of it. Yeah, it's beautiful.
Yeah, I used the
almost as good as still. Have you heard the joke about the Gestapo, Gazpacho?
Yeah, I used the butt still joke on Carr this morning. He was also angrily impressed. He's like, God damn it. I'm like, yep, that's what I said.
That's how you can tell who the true comedians are the ones when they are entertained by a joke or mad about it.
Yeah.
Because that is a joke that exists and I could have thought of it and I didn't.
Yeah, exactly.